It's Marketplace Tech for Tuesday, June 13th. I'm Molly Wood, sitting in for Ben Johnson. Uber's board of directors is considering its options now that it has seen a report on the company's internal culture from a team led by former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder. On Monday, Uber's senior vice president of business development left the company, and the board was reportedly considering a leave of absence for CEO Travis Kalanick. But here's the thing about Uber's board. It doesn't actually have a lot of power. At Uber, like at a lot of Silicon Valley companies, the power lies with the founder. Joining me now to talk more about this is Noam Wasserman. He's author of the book, The Founder's Dilemma. He also leads the USC Founder Central Initiative. Noam, thanks for talking with me.
Sure, thanks for having me.
At its most basic, what does it mean to have a founder-friendly governance structure?
For Uber, their dual-class structure gives certain owners 10 votes per share as compared to the one vote per share that the others would have. And that leads to the founders having far more control over Uber than if you just looked at how many seats they had on the board.
Is that a fairly recent trend?
It's definitely gotten a lot of attention recently, but there are companies that I've studied that go back in time decades where they did adopt that. For instance, Nike, back when it was going public in 1980, Nike with Phil Knight, the founder CEO, after the IPO, he owned less than 50% of the company. But by adopting the dual class structure, he was able to get about 85% of the board seats. You had even far more skewed within some of the other high flying unicorns that have gone public in the past. Zynga had a 70-to-1 ratio, far more extreme than Uber's 10-to-1. Groupon had 150-to-1.
Do you think as investors, you know, look at Zynga and Groupon and Uber and Theranos, that they might be less willing to allow those structures going forward?
This all comes down to bargaining and negotiating power. The sexier the company, the hotter the round of investment that they're trying to get into at, or the sexier the IPO is, the more demand that there is for it, the more that the founders are going to be able to go and dictate those terms.
So then if a company like Uber finds itself in a situation where it's not so hot, things are not so hot, what are the ramifications of that founder-friendly structure for the end product?
Well, a lot of it comes down to that if the founder still has control, that king is on the throne, and he's not infallible, that it's going to harm company value. Theranos, Elizabeth Holmes had 100 votes per share, and whether that was the founder being too central, not having the pushback from the board, not having what would be the benefits and the discipline of governance, being able to counter a little bit of the founder friendlihood, that's where some of these can go and really harm the company's value.
Noam Wasserman is the author of the book, The Founder's Dilemma. Thanks so much for talking with me, Noam.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's been a rough few days for lots of big names in tech. In fact, also on Monday, tech stocks continued an unexpected sell-off for the second straight day. Apple in particular had a big drop after an analyst cut its rating from buy to neutral. Mizuho and other analysts believe the iPhone 8 may not be a giant hit. But Wall Street is worried about any weakness in the tech sector. The big five, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Alphabet, have outperformed the overall market all year. And big investment funds have poured cash into those stocks. Those managers will be watching carefully to see if this bubble has burst.
Hi, it's Ben Brock Johnson. Marketplace is here because these days it's essential to have an independent source explaining how the economy really works, not just for CEOs, but for everyone. Your support keeps this kind of reporting coming, and it's especially vital now at the end of our fiscal year. Visit marketplace.org/donate to contribute and to keep us in your world every day. And thanks.
The Electronic Entertainment Expo, or E3, kicks off in Los Angeles today. A virtual reality, still all the rage. Intel announced a new chip series called Core X, and that it's partnering with the esports league ESL, Oculus, and Ready at Dawn Studios to create professional virtual reality sports.
And so, Sonia, you're actually in the middle of the game. What do you think?
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, my goodness. I am hanging out in mixed reality right now, and this is amazing. The first
That's
time
gamer Sonia Reed. Her handle is OMG. It's Firefox. Doug Fisher is general manager of the software and services group at Intel. He joins me from the floor of E3. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Tell us, for people who don't know how these virtual reality sports games work, is it, you know, avatars interacting in VR? Is it you're a first person, you know, shooting in VR? How do they work?
Well, a lot of what you just described, you'll have access to controls in your hand, which then translate into avatars and objects that you really see, and you're in the world, and it's all around you. If you've never experienced, you really do have to. In the Echo Arena, yes, there's going to be 10 people on each team participating in virtual reality with avatars competing against each other.
And in terms of the Core X series, are you imagining that that's going to power a new, hopefully, editorializing a little, hopefully smaller and sleeker generation of virtual reality gaming PCs?
Oh, absolutely. You're seeing that today. You're seeing these systems become more and more streamlined as we pack more and more power into our processors and integrate. So yes, you'll see that. And these are examples. Now, you're always going to have the big, large gaming engines and devices, but we're seeing really powerful laptops and portable devices becoming, you know, incredible great gaming engines.
How big do you think is the potential audience? If you wanted to estimate a chunk of that existing esports streaming audience, what do you think?
Well, I know that in traditional esports, it's over 3 million today. It's going to go, we think, well over 500 million by 2020. I expect a similar behavior in VR. Obviously, the numbers are starting a lot smaller because it's a new environment in the arenas and the gaming environments being created. So it's all new. But we wouldn't participate if we didn't think this was another great opportunity, just like esports has been.
Doug Fisher is General Manager of the Software and Services Group at Intel. Doug, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And I am Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.